Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero shows, movies, comic books, and people who are 10 steps ahead of you in finding the best place to poop at the office.
I love that that's your callback. I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that scene to come up so I could make a 10-step joke on
Biff going to the bathroom. I already like him way more than I did in Arrow.
Yeah. I didn't recognize him at first. I'm like, because he is affecting his voice a little differently.
Because I've been looking for him. I was like, and at first I thought maybe he was the, you know, at the very beginning, I thought, was he the guy, the jerk at the other office? But no, he's at the new office.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am John Maltz, so and I am joined by my good friend and co-host Guy English.
Hey, John. I don't know, man. Like, it's one of those things that everything's a joke and it's a tightly packed show. There's not a lot to riff on. But speaking of recognizing characters, I guess we give him a Piper. One of our dear readers called that out at Biffcast on Twitter.
It's Josh Segaro, right? I think that's
Josh Segaro. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the reader who called it out, but thank you.
Yep.
If I did any kind of planning, I would have your name handy.
We're lost.
The other thing is, did you recognize her dad?
Yeah. I didn't recognize what he was from immediately until somebody else mentioned it. Maybe it was you. I can't remember. But I was like, oh, I know. It was, there was someone in the Slack. I was like, I know that guy. He's been in stuff before. I mean,
yeah, like his face was real familiar to me. And then I IMDb'd him.
Yeah.
He's Larry from Perfect Strangers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And on the second rewatch, or the second time I watched it, while I was sitting at the dinner table, somebody says something about something like a stranger, and then it cuts to him and he starts talking.
Oh, is
yeah, this is just a fun little goofy edit about like a stranger. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So we are here to talk about episode 2 of She-Hulk. And I will do a moderately quick recap since these are not very long episodes. And I'm always like disappointed when they end. I'm like, oh, that's it. Yeah. At least this time I wasn't surprised. I think the first time I was like, that's it. And then this time I was like, yeah, I guess that's it.
So. Yeah, would you, I guess I'll save it till the end, but yeah. I mean, I think there's a format question about this, which is like, not what I anticipated, but I'm enjoying anyway.
Yep.
So,
yep. Yeah. Okay. So, we start out with Jen experiencing a wave of popularity after her, defending people in the courtroom. The people in the bar love her as she enters as She-Hulk, but she's not happy with the name, of course, and she still doesn't want to be a superhero. Her boss shows up and she reverts back to Jen to talk to him, but is suddenly drunk. Turns out the trial was declared a mistrial and her boss fires her because she's a liability as a superhero, which she doesn't want to be. And then no law firm in town seems to want her, so she's investigating other jobs. And so let's pause for a second.
Yeah.
On this particular page, as she's looking for other jobs, because there's a lot going on this web page that she's looking at. First of all, the first thing she's looking for is a job as a mascot.
Yes. Yeah. The first time I saw it, that's all I looked at.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I had the presence of mind the second time to be like, wait a second, there's a bunch of words on this.
Yeah. So the page is called Offbeat Jobs for a Fresh Start. So the first one is a Swiss Village mascot. The second one is Ultron Bot Cleanup. Which I'm kind of surprised that's still going on.
Well, also, you'd think they kind of would have self-annihilated when Sokovia plummeted to the earth.
Yeah. Although I think they were probably at other places as well. Not necessarily probably. All in Sokovia. Who knows? I know. It doesn't really matter. It's just a cheap reference. And then the sidebar, there's a reference to a man getting in a bar fight with metal claws.
Fights with metal claws. Yeah, and bar
seems
brawl.
Like Wolverine.
And then at least it's a shout out to like the original X-Men movie. Like,
yes.
Bare minimum. That's the exact introduction to Wolverine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there is a reference to the giant celestial in the ocean. Why is there a giant statue of a man in the ocean?
Which is, I think, as far as we're ever going to go with that line.
Yeah. I don't think they're ever going to. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they'll do something about it later. But that does seem like. I mean, I can't imagine what would happen to the Earth if, like, a giant. Like, it seems like if mass is coming out, mass must go back in, right? And so, like, there should be a huge subduction someplace. But you know,
but it is a space god.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
who knows?
If it's cracking like an egg, like yeah, it doesn't make sense. Just
don't think about it too hard. Right. Yeah. And then across the top, there are tabs for Find Ant-Man, which I assume is a game, Norse Mythology and Avengers. And then there's a QR code, and I actually follow the QR code, and it takes you to a page where you can read a free She-Hulk comic book, which is...
That's cool.
Which is... I guess it's okay, since this show it breaks the fourth wall anyway, right? Because otherwise it wouldn't make sense, right?
they did it in Moon Knight.
There's a QR code in the
museum. There's a QR code some exhibit or something, and if you scan it, you get a Moon Knight comic.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay,
I think it's just a thing that they're doing now. To reward Eagle-Eyed.
Yep.
Is Eagle-Eyed the name of a character? Feels like it should be.
Probably. Yeah.
I guess they've got Hawkeye already.
Yeah, really. Eagle-Eye sounds he's a ripoff.
He comes in like the janky packaging with like poor fonts, and it's like right out of China, like right out of the China clone factory. Not that they're all not out of China, but you know what I mean. Like the unlicensed knockoff ones.
what the factory does in its off hours.
Yeah, which is probably just keep printing the same things.
Exactly,
and
then repackage them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she gets called to a family dinner, and they're all very super helpful to her. Her dad manages to throw her a lifeline, getting her away from the table for a pep talk, and points out that she didn't destroy a city like her cousin, so she's already doing better than him, which she pretty much
did. They have a good relationship. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah. And then she heads back to the bar to drown her sorrows when Mr. Holloway of GLK&H shows up and offers her a job. She quickly accepts and finds out when she shows up at work that they want her to head the superhuman division and to be in She-Hulk form all the time, which is a little annoying. Holloway shows her to her office, which is amazing, and then freaking Prometheus shows up with a gift basket.
Freaking Prometheus. With a gift basket, yeah. He's very sweet in this one.
Yeah.
I guess he was sweet in the other one, wasn't he, before he turned...
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, he was a nice kid. Yeah, right. I mean, he was like supposedly helping Oliver, right? I think. Wasn't he like a DA or something? I can't even remember now.
I don't know. That guy was so far ahead, I'm dizzy just thinking about it.
Holloway tells her that her first case is getting Emil Blonsky out of prison. She claims that she has a conflict of interest because he tried to kill her cousin, and Holloway says that if she doesn't take it, then she doesn't have a job. He suggests that she go meet with Blonsky before she makes a decision, so she heads to damage control where he's locked up. Blonsky, it turns out, is very nice. Maybe too nice, but we'll probably find out for sure. And he mentions seven soulmates that he met through the prison pen pal system, then says that the super soldier serum drove him mad, which is what caused his rampage. She calls Bruce to clear it with him, and he's totally cool with it. This is my favorite line from the whole thing. He says he was a totally different person back then.
Literally a different guy.
Literally a different guy.
I like that he even uses literally. Because
it's so great.
It could be like, well, my body, like I am now a combined human.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Hulk
human.
It makes
sense.
But
that's not what he means. It's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense in the universe. And it also makes sense if you know that he was played by Ed Norton in that movie. Yeah. You know, back when he fought the Abomination. And, We pull back and we see that he's on the Sicarian ship, and the call ends. She calls Holloway to accept the job and says getting Blonsky out is a slam dunk. Holloway tells her to check the news, where she finds out Blonsky's been sneaking out to fight clubs, and there's a big scandal over it. Then we get a mid-credits scene where she's helping out around her parents' house lifting heavy things.
Which was cute.
Yes.
I liked it.
Yeah.
More, not Balky, the other guy, the Balky.
Yeah, fellow. Right.
Larry was his name.
Okay. I never watched that show either. But.
I don't know if I was too old. I feel like I was too
old.
I always looked down on it, which is not, I'm sorry if people loved it. It just was not a comedy for me.
Right. I mean, there's different, you know, you watch different things at different stages of your life. And
yeah, I mean, I grew up watching MASH, which is kind of a hard... A, Should not do that if you're a kid, because there's a lot of horror. There's a lot of horrible stuff in MASH.
Yeah.
You know, MASH, Cheers, like that kind of stuff was awesome. I never really got into the, like, the Thursday night.
No.
Like, that was never my shtick. I think maybe I was more of a computer nerd and I would play computer games all the time, or like, I can't remember what I did in those primetime slots that wasn't watch, you know, Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Anyway. I like that you are in, like, refusing to engage on this topic.
I don't even remember when it was, honestly.
I think it was like the 90s, like a mid-90s kind of thing.
Mid-90s? Okay. Yeah, it was not a show that I was interested in any way. I mean, it was family sitcom? I don't even remember. Like, was there a family involved, or was it just two wacky guys living together?
Well,
and wacky Russian, you know, guy.
Balky was like, it was a fish out of water thing, right?
Yeah.
Which I always wears thin on me. Well, it gets tired after a bit, right? Like, you can only laugh at it so much.
You'd think that he would assimilate eventually.
Right, yeah. Which
1986,
is, to be honest,
it started in 86.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, wow. It's off by a decade. Yikes. Yeah.
Man, it's funny looking at, like, he's so young.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I had, like, a real pause. I'm like, there's something about this guy. Because he has a particular way of, like, speaking that sort of stands out.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I totally forgot because I dragged us so far afield. Oh, fish out of water. That's what I was worried about with Ted Lasso. But it is not that show. I thought, like, it's just going to be another one of these things.
Right.
It is not that at all.
No.
Speaking of 30-minute comedies.
There's elements. There's definitely elements of that in it, but it's not really the...
Oh, yeah. That's
the
not
crux
what it's,
of it. Yeah, that's not what... I mean, some of the jokes come from that, but not...
Yeah, but that's not the heart of the show, for
no.
sure.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of 30-minute comedies, this is a 30-minute comedy that we're watching, it appears.
Yeah. Is it even shorter than that?
This one's 30 on the nose, including all of the credits and everything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so yeah. And like, 30-minute comedies are really like 20 minutes.
22 minutes.
Something like that. They're 22 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So. There's a news parody show up here that my friend Tim McAuliffe used to write for called This Hour Has 22 Minutes.
Oh, yeah.
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 And it's got that.
I remember
very
austere. Anyway. I don't know if I ever saw it, but
What's his name from Nathan Fieldman or something? The guy that's like super popular right now.
Oh, right.
He's from that show.
The Rehearsal. Yeah. The guy from The Rehearsal.
That's
a very just digression here for a second. Like, diversive. Is that what I mean? Divisive show.
Yeah.
Because I know some people love it and other people absolutely hate it.
I have not seen it.
I have not seen it either. I mean, I think it's one of those things that's
awkward.
Super. Yeah, right. It's super awkward. And I think that's the crux of the.
Yeah, I used to watch him doing interviews for This Hour Is 22 Minutes and like that kind of stuff. Not a lot, but enough. And it was CanCon, so you see it more often. And my friend worked on the show, so I was like more aware of it than
right.
I would typically just volunteer to be aware of it. And he's very, very good at what he does, but what he does is make me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and
right.
It doesn't always
I already feel plenty uncomfortable. I don't need I don't need any help in that department.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess it makes sense. Since the first one was pretty short, that the subsequent issues, subsequent episodes are going to be pretty short.
Yeah.
Again, very tight. That scene where they're where she's visiting the different law firms and like the camera just stays set and they change out her, they change the zoom background on her, basically works really well. There's like not a lot of time wasted in any of these.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not like a huge. I guess there's. Well, is there a huge progression in the story in this? I mean, like, she does lose her job, and she meets Blonsky. So things happen for sure.
So one of the things that we're going to talk about after in the sweep is Larry Wilmore interviewed Jessica Gao, who is the creator and the writer of this, and they've worked together on a pilot before. Like, they seem to know each other really well, and she was saying that the story that we saw last week. Like the flashback part of that story actually originally occurred in like the fourth episode or something.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah. And Feige was like, move it up so that people don't necessarily want to sit through your show for four episodes. And she's like, I never thought about that. They have some interesting discussion, like Larry and her have an interesting discussion about you know, how different people in the giant massive corporation approach the art, and like, you know, what audience you're going for. And she's like, well, I was just assuming everybody's going to watch everything. And Kevin wanted it to be a little front loaded with stuff. So,
yeah,
which is, anyway, it's a fascinating interview, but it does kind of explain a little bit of why we're off on like a little bit of an odd kilter, because it was right up to production, I think, where she decided to like move it to the front. And Larry even picks the fix, basically. What was it in the script that changed it? And it's just when she ducks back in the door from about to go to the court case, and she explains the little thing. Like, that apparently is all just sort of spliced in and rearranged. Did the story move so much this time? A lot got done. She lost her job and she got a new job. Yeah. And she's now now we're on to like,
it does seem the mission, weird though, which still, is defend, I mean, it seems, it, when it, when you get to the end, it does seem short though.
It does. Yeah. Cause I think what would have happened is, more of this would have been packed into the first episode, giving this one a little bit more time to breathe. But because we front loaded the origin story thing.
Yeah.
They got crunched into this second one.
Yeah, I guess.
Which I still think works pretty well, but it does. I'm not like, yeah,
and I'm not like super. I mean, I'm the only thing I would say is I'm enjoying the show, and I'm always like a little disappointed when it ends. Little bit earlier than I sort of expected to.
Yeah,
it's not like I think the episode is not self-contained or anything, because it does seem like it's fine. You know, logically speaking, it seems like it's they hold up on their own. So that's really what's important.
So I guess this one, probably the first one, introduced us to the trials and tribulations of the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a Hulk. That sucks.
Yeah.
This one introduces us to the... Well, it's basically
a great line, great, and, you know, super well delivered, of course.
Yeah. This one introduces us to the actual story for, like, the... Like, first one is character, second one is... Okay, what's actually going to happen? And
yeah,
it looks like she's being abused. God, well, abused. That's a very not the right word for somebody who's getting paid a huge amount of money to be a fancy pants lawyer.
Yeah,
but they are using her for her Hulky form, and even doing pro bono for the Abomination as a basically as an advertising, a marketing gimmick.
Right.
So she's clearly being taken advantage of, is what I wanted to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would think there's a good chance that, you know, at the end of this, she starts her own firm, maybe?
Yeah, then she can hire Luke Cage. Jessica Jones.
And Jessica Jones, yeah.
Yeah, anybody.
Or, you know, like, or join Nelson and Murdoch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get top billing. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway. I think, like, yeah, these, I mean, and she even makes several comments about them as she's walking in, and they didn't do a thing where, like, I mean, you know, that guy seems kind of like off kilter a little bit, Holloway. So if her speaking to the camera is audible, him not noticing seems probably in character. Like, he seems like a goofy guy who, if she was just talking aloud, would not say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like his response to how does that make you feel when she's been talking to us, and she says agnostic, because he's kind of thoughtful about it. He's like, huh,
yeah,
never. Yeah. Like, he's not insulted that like she's not falling over all over him about the offer or the opportunity or anything. He's just more like completely befuddled about
you're not what I expect. You're acting in a manner that I did not expect.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah.
What? So to me,
but I guess, like, what I was going to say is, like, these guys don't seem like nice people particularly. Like, it seems like, you know, and usually in shows, big law firms are often portrayed poorly. So it's a particular trope, and it doesn't seem like she's going to want to be there long term.
No, I don't think so. There's the extra jackass dude who he's mad at her for becoming She-Hulk. I forget what his beef is. Like, they're in the bar and he's mad
that the guy from She-Hulk, who she used to work with.
Who she used to work with. Yeah,
yeah.
He's like, there's a hot chick over there. I'm going to go talk to it. It's like, oh my God.
Which was funny. I mean, you know, because that's
it's
a,
funny.
Terrible, you know, that's what a terrible person says. And that's exactly what he said. So,
well, that's it. They are rendering the characters in as gross a way as possible. I don't mean visually, just like they're like, these are the characters that they are. They're pretty well delineated. I do think her new boss, Holloway, is shady, and he's supposed to be shady, right? Like, he got his client off by having the jury, dismiss the case? Like, claiming the jury was prejudiced because she'd saved their lives.
Yeah.
Which, that's kind of fair enough, actually.
Yeah, like, I mean, it makes some sense.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, that's a mistrial for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you get off, but yeah, I guess you get a mistrial and, like, okay, let's try that again.
Maybe they can try it again.
Yeah. It remains to be seen if he had Titania burst in there.
Yeah. Yeah. She's definitely coming back, I'm sure. Right.
Yeah. I love the news clip at the front that introduces her as a social media influencer.
Yeah.
A super influencer. Yeah. Which is perfect and explains the over the top gaudy costume and like just that's great.
They also released one of those videos, the promo videos of her defacing a She-Hulk Attorney at Law poster in like LA. Scrawling her own name over the top of it and doing some other stuff. So that was pretty amusing.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. Also, it's the kind of setup for a character that gives Jamil Jamali so much range to just play. You know, like, go and have fun and be over the top. Like, we hired you for a reason. And now you've, like, that character has the framework to it that you could do any number of weird over the top things and it'll work. So that's great. The big green monster in the cage is Blonsky. How did you feel about that scene?
I thought it was great. I mean, first of all, there's a toilet in there, so it's
yeah,
that's okay. The bed's pretty bad. I mean, the bed's just a very thin mattress on the floor, but.
Yeah,
but but it's something. That's okay.
The readers don't realize that every time you walk into a room, you're like looking for a toilet. It's like,
I'm older.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
You gotta scan the room. You gotta make sure you.
Keep your head on the swivel, but you know for.
I thought they played that pretty well. I mean, I'm assuming that there's another, I don't know, like what, if there's another shoe to drop with him. I mean, there's definitely, so the reference to Seven Soulmates is a reference to, was there a Sinister Seven? There was a Sinister Six, right?
Sinister Six is the Spidey set of villains, as I, you know, I'm just
trying to like, there has to be something there, right?
I believe the Thunderbolts are the seven of them.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah. Like I mean, I couldn't figure out exactly what that was supposed to be, but it was clearly a thing. So
I think it's true. Like, I mean,
Thunderbolts would make sense, right?
Type thing. Yeah.
That's coming.
It's also a weird mystical number.
Yeah.
You know, like he's calling them soulmates. It's kind of, to me, it read like the joke is that they were women writing him in jail.
Yeah.
And like making fun of that edit is weird. It's weird. I don't know how you fall in love with somebody who's behind bars for a terrible crime, but it's like, it happens enough that it's not like, I know it's, yeah. And I don't mean somebody that you know that's wrongfully imprisoned or anything. I mean, you know, like mass murderers who are very dangerous people who are like legit prisoners. Anyway, like this guy destroyed a town. Who wants to like, you know, send him a little thank you note? Like, that's kind of screwed up. I loved Higgs' explanation because, and you see her, the gears turning in her head.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a pretty good case.
I think that's a very good case. I mean, conceivably could be part of what happened. I mean, I don't think he was a great guy to begin with.
No, but he's, you know, what was he? They said a Royal Marine Commando. You know, he's like a very tough guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy that
you want to have. Yeah, and the job is like take out a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you don't need a nice guy. You just need to get it done, which you know, Wolverine. They said Wolverine after the Hulk at some point too. Yeah. So that makes sense, and it can hold up pretty well in court because nobody's privy to him really going over the top, right? Like, he was given this super soldier serum, went a little batty, got all beat up, healed, and then what did he do? Did he go and get Banner's blood?
He went. So they went to New York. They had that doctor, whoever the guy that turns into the master.
The leader.
Thank you. Extract his Hulk essence from him, supposedly, and then he had it inject him into him.
Yeah.
And
but then that guy, well, I don't know if he died. He got Hulk blood in his head, so he's probably not dead. But he's
no, I think he's well. He's well, leader, I mean, I think right? yeah, in universe yeah. he's still alive. I don't who knows if he'll come back or not.
Right. So as a defense, it makes sense, right? Like, yeah, they pumped me full of this juice. I went a little batty.
Mm-hmm.
I did a whole bunch of damage. Kind of not my fault. Kind of is his fault if you watch the movie, but.
Right.
It goes both ways, right? It's like, well,
yeah,
you probably wouldn't have been. Like, at the beginning of the movie, you don't get the sense that he wants to burn down Harlem or anything else, because when they're running around in Brazil, he's not just, like, dropping bombs everywhere trying to kill Banner. You know what I mean? Like, they're chasing him. They're trying to capture him.
Yep.
I think they even trank the dog, which is...
They do trank the dog, yes.
Yeah. So, you know.
Nice well, you know, it's also a Marvel movie. I don't think they're going to have a dog get shot.
Yeah,
you know, in a superhero movie. I mean, that kind of brings the audience down a little bit.
We're launching the MCU, and within the first 2 minutes of our second movie, we shot a dog. Like that's not a great way to go.
So I mean, and it seems like he has some sort of support group that he runs. I don't know if that's later that he sets that up or what happens.
Yeah, that's according to the ads that we've seen.
Right? Yeah, through the ads, you can see that. So he has definitely, you know, checked off the boxes, right? He's shown remorse. He's written haikus to family members or the people that he murdered.
I like that he wrote a haiku to Bruce.
Yeah. And then Bruce thought it was really nice.
Well,
yeah, like Bruce just seems like he's such an affable kind of guy that he would fall for that, you know?
Yes, definitely. Well, so there's a question. Is it an act, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is. I think it's an act. Although, you know, the whole thing with Wong in Shang-Chi makes me think that it's not necessarily an act. Like, he's been working on himself to a certain degree. So I don't, you know, even though he's going to, you know, fight clubs, he's fighting in fight clubs and he's not trying to kill anybody. And he's also not trying to get out. Like, I mean, he could have like used that as an opportunity to escape. But he crawls right back through the portal to go back into his cell.
Yeah. It's not like the corral or anything.
Yeah.
Like they have a, it's like, okay, you had a day out, basically.
Yeah, and right.
Back. How badly does that stymie Jessica's case? Because it's a bad idea to let him out anyway, just because he could turn into that.
I don't understand how it happened. I think I would need more information in order to make a judgment on that, because it's like, is Wong just like busting in there to get him out to go to fight clubs? That part I don't understand. Well, I would have assumed that he had some sort of permission to do that, but I don't know. I don't know how damage control works. I don't know if there are grease and palms in there or what's going on. So,
well, the news report at the end sort of intimates that he escaped, or at least they say he escaped prison to fight in a fight club. Which it would not have been news to her if damage control had okayed it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it just would have been in the file.
You wouldn't think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, damage control seems like a shady organization, right?
Oh, yeah. Damage control is.
I don't really, I wouldn't trust them to be forthcoming with information.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Tim Roth, lovely as always.
Yeah. Yeah.
Genuinely funny guy. wasn't given a lot of funny stuff to do in the movie.
He's amusing, though. I mean, yeah. Oh, in the movie, yeah. Oh, in the movie for sure,
yeah.
Yes.
In this one, he's, yeah, he's yes. amusing. Yeah, like the namaste, first namaste. And yeah. Like, there's a sincerity to him. Like, he's intensely laid back in a way that's like, you're kind of not that laid back, but.
Yeah, it seems unlikely, right? It.
Yeah, yeah. Seems ready. He seems like ready to go at any moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dug him. Anything else we want to talk about, Emil?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have any other notes on that, on him in particular. It's good to see him. I mean, I think I'm glad that they do this. I'm glad they bring. I mean, I would love to see the leader again. Really. I mean,
me too.
Nothing against. It's not my favorite movie, but. Bringing back stuff from it and making it better, that's great. I'm all for that. Since it's already part of the canon of this universe, so why not do that? Why? I mean, don't just ignore it and pretend that it's... And that's another reason why I love the shout-out, too. You know, the fact that Ed Norton... Because it's just, you know, it's a wink to us and like, okay, we know. obviously.
Yeah. So. Maybe we should go back and watch that after we're done with this 9 episodes of this.
Well, we did a Mothership episode on that a couple of years ago. It was probably longer ago. It just seems like it was a couple of years ago. It was probably like 4. So I feel like I haven't watched, like it hasn't been that long since I watched it.
Yeah.
I don't really need to watch it again right now.
Yeah. I think I covered the Ang Lee one for that, which I also admire as an art of like. They hadn't figured out how to do comic book movies yet.
Yeah.
And so Ang Lee was like, well, what if I just made a comic on the screen? And it did not work. But bless him for trying, kind of, in a way.
Yeah. There's a lot there's a lot of things that are kind of cool in that movie. I mean, like the comic book swipes and stuff like that.
Right? Yeah.
But yeah, I think the most of the problem is just the story.
Yeah. It's just kind of bust up. Like his personal side of the story is like, not great. And then he's like facing off with like a radioactive giant mutant poodle, which is doesn't really get your blood pumping as much as the abomination, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't know if they didn't. So, they may not have had other characters because that was done. Oh, I forget the whole. It's probably too long to go into anyway. If we don't know the provenance of who made that movie and how it was distributed by Universal. I think Universal had the rights to the Hulk back then.
I think they still do because the second one is also Universal.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's why they haven't done like a Hulk movie.
Yeah. Which I think segues nicely into where's Bruce going? He's on a spaceship. He's leaving. I think those rights expire soonish, you know?
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah. And they've had to move a few chairs around here because I feel like Taika Waititi picked him up and put him into the battle world thing.
Yeah.
And
I think he had to go back for Endgame. Ruffalo mentioned battle world recently. Yeah. Like he said that it's a possibility or something like that.
Like they had to bring him back out of Endgame and then sideline him immediately by having Thanos thump him really hard and he just not show up.
Yeah.
And now they're like, okay, well, I guess we got to put him back on this planet. Like it's weird. You know what I mean? It's like,
he's got to go back to Sakaar.
Yeah. At the end of Avengers, whatever he left. Okay. Yeah. They took him away from Sakaar and now it's like, okay, you got to go back because we actually want to do this thing that requires you to be on a planet.
Yeah.
But the part of the reason for his rage at that story and part of the story's interest is that, they exiled him there, so when he comes back, he is pissed.
Right.
But if he just
because
somebody sent him like a space Uber,
right.
And he just took off.
Well, it seems like so. It seems like they're setting up Battle World without the World War Hulk element.
Yeah.
And then there's also like he was Hulk for 2 years. Banner doesn't really know what went on there. And in the comic books, of course, he's got a few children.
Yeah,
the Hulk does, so possible that will come up, I guess.
Yeah, and it is a lot, like I said, I guess last week, a lot of this is about like, well, a lot of the movies recently have been about passing the torch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it would make sense. Although I do not care about the Hulk's son. I like the Hulk.
Yeah.
Is only interesting to me in that, like, it is the most basic Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. Although his Mr. Hyde is sort of, well, he's good. The Hulk is good, but misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of depth to the character. I think you can tell cool stories with that character, but there's not enough there for me to be like, you know what? I want to know about his son and Ragey Strong Guy. Like, the Strong Guy doesn't really do it for me. Luke Cage, most of it, or parts of it, were really good. Not because he was a strong guy, just because the rest of the story was fascinating.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that would... There's also, I mean, I don't know, can't remember if he's still around. I'm assuming he's around in some form or another. But Amadeus Cho was the Hulk for a while when they did the whole thing where they basically replaced all the major characters with new versions of them. And he was really good. I really enjoyed that comic book, too. And I would love to see him, like, kid.
I would prefer that.
You know,
yeah.
Prodigy genius comes up with a way to, you know, backtrack the Hulk serum but goes right to Smart Hulk, basically.
I would prefer that to Scar or Hulk's child born of the battle world. That's like a barbarian, like a basically a Conan the barbarian.
You know, they want to have a kid there for the episode, you know, that movie, that I would be all right with that, but I don't like want that to be the new Hulk.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we have a new Hulk. We've got She-Hulk, but different kind of character, right?
Yeah. And they have, I think they, Feige has also said that she will be in MCU movies as well.
Okay. That's good.
Without stating what ones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Secret Wars, but she was a pretty significant part of that in the 84 one.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think we're done with Bruce for the remainder of the series?
Yeah, we could be. I think we probably are, right? Unless he's there in flashbacks or something. It seems like they're sending him off to do whatever he's, you know, whatever he's going to be in next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, you know, like a lot of these shows, you need to remove the crutch.
Yeah.
Like if Bruce is just hanging around and she gets...
If he was around for the whole thing, then it's kind of like not so clearly her show.
Right. I mean, not that she can't take care of herself, but when you have a Hulk, that, you know, it's kind of, it's a bit of a trump card.
Yeah.
So
we ready to do a ritual?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think it's ritual time. Why don't you go first?
Okay. No, I mean, this one was good too. Two for two. I would give this one a biff. Like I said, the only thing that slightly bothers me is when it ends because I want more and I don't want to have to wait another week, but that's a good problem. So that's okay. It continues to be funny. I really laughed. I mean, I legitimately laughed very hard when they did the reference to Ed Norton. And the rest is more amusing rather than laugh out loud funny, but it's funny. And then her saying, you know, at the end, her comment, which I guess we're not supposed to say on the show, which I think you said earlier, right?
Did I? What?
Oh, no, she says, oh, that sucks. That's what she says. Okay. I was thinking said something else for a second.
Oh,
No, so that's okay. No. We can say that. Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
That was also funny. Yeah. And she's great. She's very enjoyable to watch. The stuff with her family was a little bit out of left field, kind of. I liked it. I don't know if we needed it in this show particularly, but it was amusing enough. So it was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what about you?
I agree. It's a biff. It's a bit of a reserved biff, I guess. It's a biff reading a romance novel with his feet up by the campfire after he's tortured Ollie all day. I don't know. It's a laid back biff. The family stuff, they set up the law comedy thing. Great. I like all of the characters revolving around her law life.
Yeah.
I like the boss. I like her old boss who was pretty sympathetic while, you know, he's like, look, I got to let you go, which is, I don't know how legal that is, but it
yeah, I don't know makes how sense. Legal that is either. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's the DA, so I don't know. Who knows? I like the Emil Blonsky stuff. I like that we got Bruce out of the picture. The only thing was, like, I don't understand the purpose of the family. I don't know where what the show has in it that is going to give us and what elements from that we need. Because I thought between, like, you know, the work family of the law office and the crazy caper of the superhero stuff, there's enough meat on those bones to do a lot of fun stuff with.
Yeah.
But, you know, families are really revealing of who people are in their, when their guard isn't down. You know what I mean? Like when they're just being Jen around the house and moving the TV and like doing stuff like that. So maybe there's more to the story revolving around that, which kind of makes sense because they keep going back to the making the point that she's a woman and sort of being taken advantage of by her law firm.
Right.
You know, there's clearly a lot of misogyny in some of the characters. Like they're not.
I think they were trying to show that too with her. I guess it was her cousin or other cousin. I don't know who the guy was who was at the table who was the Best Buy manager. By sort of showing that, you know, everyone's like, oh, he's the Best Buy manager and she's still a highly successful lawyer, even though she lost her job and she's a freaking superhero. And they're like, they have to give her all kinds of advice because she's in trouble somehow.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that was it. And I guess that's it.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure if it came across super well, but, it did feel like a bit of a detour.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll see. I think if these were hour longs, we would at least get a better sense of what the pieces were for. As it is, like if you were to write a half hour, like a 22-minute comedy, I think you would not have had the family at all because you would have been packing stuff in with other stuff. Like, as long running as Cheers or Seinfeld were or Friends, you didn't get a lot of tertiary characters just introduced for no good reason, you know?
Like, yeah.
And when they were there, they served a purpose and then left. So I don't really know what the purpose of this is so early in the show. But we'll see.
Yeah.
It is still a riff, though. I did enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And I've watched it twice, and I've giggled and laughed at, you know, laughed at it both times and enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, then let's devote a little bit of time to Superhero Sweep.
Zoom.
What do we have? you dumped a lot of notes in here, so
yeah,
I feel like this is your baby.
Okay, so yeah, let me just briefly take over the sweep.
Yeah. Oh, so I did not manage to see. I didn't see or listen to the Larry Wilmore talking with Jessica Gao, so I'll have to listen to that later.
Yeah, I didn't expect that you would have. I just did want to bring it up to our audience.
Yeah.
Or readers. She's very funny. She's very laid back with Larry. It seems like they've known each other for a long time and their families know each other. It's great. It's a good listen. And she kind of goes into how she was rejected at Marvel for like 3 or 4 other projects. They kept rejecting her. It's like once a year she'd go and pitch to Feige. And like she's telling this story about like, it was Shang-Chi. She'd like written for Shang-Chi and they didn't want her. And she was like, oh, because she'd put a She-Hulk. She'd put She-Hulk in Shang-Chi because she was a huge She-Hulk fan. And they're like, you kind of not, you're not really, it's not working
for
this.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
So she's Chinese.
You're jamming you're taking two action figures and mashing them together.
Yeah, yeah. Which when you hear her talk, you're like, and I could definitely see that in her head. She's a very lively, you know, enthusiastic person who, you know, her first job is working at a comic store.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she's like a real fun nerd kind of thing. Or at least you get that sense. So, you know, feeling that like, well, if they're not going to take me, an Asian lady, for Shang-Chi, like I'm kind of out of, that sucks, you know? And then when they announced the She-Hulk, she got furious. Because she's like, if they don't, I told them I would burn the place down if they didn't give me She-Hulk, and now they announced She-Hulk. And her partner, great. I can't remember who, like somebody in her life, her husband or whoever, was saying like, well, they didn't announce a writer, so maybe they don't have one. She was like not hearing it. She's saying that she's just furious. She's like, no, they've got a writer. I'm going to burn the place down. And then like 2 weeks later, she gets a call from Marvel being, hey, do you want to come pitch on She-Hulk?
And she's like, I would love to. That'd be fantastic. Yeah, thank exactly. you. Thank you for thinking of me.
Yeah. So it's fun. And Larry Wilmore is a fun, smart guy. He's been at this, you know, he's been in the business forever. I'm assuming everybody knows who Larry Wilmore is, but maybe not. Senior Black correspondent on The Daily Show is maybe how you might have known him best. Mm-hmm. But he's also like a showrunner for a whole bunch of stuff, including the Bernie Mac show. I can't even just list stuff off the top of my head. But he's been behind the scenes in like TV, particularly Black TV in the U.S. for like decades. Very, very smart guy. Very funny. Fascinating conversations about all kinds of stuff. But this one in particular was fun. He's got another one with the guys from All Mankind.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is also really good because he's a huge space nerd.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Good guy. Or fascinating.
Now I got to listen to that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. She also apparently says that the Daredevil costume was mandated.
Yeah.
I haven't read this yet. Actually, I don't think she said it on that show, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think we've talked about this before. I can't remember when. Like when a hero shows up in one movie and the costume is like not quite what it is in the next movie, it's kind of
I mean, that's, you know, what difference does it mean? Like I guess you could, maybe you'd rather have him in the black, you know, sort of workout gear type, the more ninja style.
Outfit.
That he wore.
And
they were like, no, he's got to be in this. It has to be red and yellow.
Yeah, I mean, you could have done a way more clownish version of Daredevil, right? Like, and so it seems to me that at minimum they've settled on the tone that they want the character to be.
If they are doing it deliberately different from what was in the Netflix shows, just to make a break from that stuff.
I kind of think they would have to.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't enjoy
like
those shows.
You know, it's similar. It's similar to the costume in the Netflix show, but it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I don't think they don't want to be beholden to a bunch of stuff that they didn't write or have any sort of, you know, oversight on.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. I'm still kind of intrigued about the ownership of that. I mean, I guess that they owned it all along, right? And it was just being distributed through.
Yeah,
Netflix. Because I always thought that, oh, this is something that, you know, they've licensed it to Netflix temporarily, and Netflix. I don't know how that works. That all seems so ridiculously complicated.
It feels like It feels like they wanted to experiment with TV without taking up airtime on NBC.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Disney Plus. Do you know what I mean? Like
and they also just, didn't. I mean, they probably wanted to do a show that was a little bit edgier than they could do on NBC.
Yeah. And it seems, or at least they have successfully clawed back any rights that Netflix had. Because it would have been insane if they had given Sony half of the. Half of the goodies and given Universal a couple, and then like decades later when they were taking off really big, still managed to like do the same basic screw up and just give Netflix the rights to a whole bunch of crap that they could have done better with themselves. Anyway, so I doubt it's going to be the exact same thing, but anyway.
Yeah.
On the subject of clothing...
we have our late breaking update.
Got the clothing closet.
Yeah, so I forget exactly what we said last day, what we said on the air last week, but I was talking about the shirt that the Hulk is wearing, speculating that it might be something to do with the Thunderbolts, and it's not, right? It's just a Native American shirt that someone sells and you can buy
You can buy, and I will put the I will put it in the show notes, which I believe I figured out how to do.
It's a lovely looking shirt.
Yeah, it does look good. Yeah, I did have to text you when I discovered that it was. Because
well, I needed to be stopped from going down that road.
Well, there was something particularly bad about ripping off like a Native American's work.
Yeah, and I would never have done it if I thought it was just that.
I know, of course not.
It was clear that it had influences, but I really thought it was like a Thunderbolt shirt. Thunderbolt shirt.
Yeah, I honestly could have been a Def Leppard album. Yeah, could have been a Def Leppard album. Was Native American. Yeah. Yeah. So we will instead, for this week only, give you a link to someplace else to buy t-shirts. Matt Shackman is in talks to direct the Fantastic Four. Who's Matt Shackman again?
He was he the showrunner on WandaVision or one of the directors? I can't remember.
I believe he's the showrunner. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it says WandaVision's director, directing the hit Marvel Studios show. So I don't know. But anyway, he worked a lot on WandaVision. So that seems like a decent fit. The tone of that show could work well for a Fantastic Four movie. He's also just in talks, so this may or may not work. And he's supposed to be doing the next Star Trek movie, but who knows when or if that'll even happen.
Man, we got
that stuff. That stuff is so up in the air; it's ridiculous. They're doing a good job with the TV shows, but
that whole thing, the J.J. Abrams, the Kelvin universe is just it's bananas. Screwed the pooch out of it so badly.
I have my opinions about the Kelvin universe, but
you don't like it.
They're not super favorable. There's definitely stuff that I like about those movies, and I enjoyed the first one, but it's kind of hit and miss for me.
Yeah. I think the first one's pretty fun, although a little hackety, and I kind of expected it to straighten out after that.
I think that's my problem with the whole thing, right? I mean, they're making adventure movies, and they're not really, they're not great Star Trek movies.
Yeah. On the other hand, and I stand by this, Star Trek the Motion Picture, not an adventure movie, not an action movie, very That's much for sure. a deep sci-fi movie. And I kind of like it, but you have to be in a, just going to sit here and like absorb the 2001-iness of this mm-hmm. and like the thoughtful sci-fi of it.
Yeah.
Which, I get why you would try to do that with Star Trek after having been off the air for so long as your first movie. Like, let's elevate it. Like, why don't we do it smart rather than...
Mm-hmm.
The goofy serialized stuff that we did in the '60s.
Yeah.
Goofy serialized is pretty fun, you know? And
they took the fun out of it. That's the problem. I mean, they didn't inject anything. I like what they, I mean, I do like some of the stuff that they added. They're sort of a very, I don't know how to say it. Like sort of nautical. I mean, they added a lot of like serious nautical stuff to it, really. I mean, you know, they're talking about yaw and pitch, and I mean, and then they're very kind of detailed about getting the getting the ship going and all that stuff. I kind of like that aspect of it.
I love the fact that it
doesn't go anywhere exciting.
Right. Yeah. I like all of that. And that stuff like really informed, I think, the second one especially, which was like, just cool scenes of them like pulling the grates off the torpedo tubes and like the ensign's whistle as he like arrives to inspect the ship, doing a tour of the engine room and like not caring about it, but it's like, well, I guess like he's like, Scotty's got a handle on this, but I guess part of my job is to go down and check that it's mm-hmm. working. Like,
he takes out a white glove and runs it across the.
Yeah, that's like, it's kind of.
And Scotty rolls his eyes, like looks at him. I know, like, and really.
And I love how Scotty notes, like, this is prior to the latter movies for sure, but like, Scotty is just so comfortable with him that he can also be like, yeah, this is all BS. Like, yeah. Like, his wiping the white rag thing there, you know, the cloth, is he's being contemptuous of himself and the role he's being asked mm-hmm. to play. Mm-hmm. Like, not
Yeah.
Not Scotty's work or anything.
No, it's no. Like, it's like he's supposed to, like, there's like, you know, a tradition that he's following.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, God, this sucks. Like, let's just get out of here and, you know, go watch a planet get made with the corpse of my dead best friend. Classic Star Trek style. Yeah, sorry, spoilers for Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, really, if you haven't seen Wrath of Khan.
Speaking of Wrath, Batman the Caped Crusader has been canned at HBO Max, the latest casualty in HBO Max, maximizing our frustration with it. Caped Crusader was the animated, sequel or spiritual sequel to Batman the Animated Series, which is well-renowned as just being just a terrific cartoon and one of the best portrayals of Batman, you know, point for now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so whatever, just throw that on more, the pilot.
There's been a lot, I mean, they laid off a bunch of people too, right? If I remember.
Yeah, correctly. Yeah, and a bunch of executives that's came out claiming that it's mostly people of color, like there's racist elements and targeting middle America. I don't want this to be a running segment.
No,
And we've come up too much, but I was legit excited about the Caped Crusader. Seeing that one added to the pile of Jawas that these stormtroopers have left burning in the desert is a bit of a bummer. Speaking of a bit of a bummer, Jordan Ellis,
Elsis,
yeah, has left Superman and Lewis. A show.
Did we talk about this last week at all? I can't remember now.
We didn't. No.
Yeah, okay.
We went off on a wild tangent, half of which I had to cut, just because we were going in and out of speaking between us and speaking.
To
an audience, and like some of the things we ended up saying to the readers were referencing things that I had to cut because they were not for public consumption, basically. Not that we were saying anything stupid or anything, but whatever. Like, when you start editing a show, it turns out there's a house of cards there, right? You can't pull out.
Anyway,
long story short, I don't think we talked about this. So he left the show, and the network gave a sort of non-announcement saying that he had left, and it wasn't due to any on-set.
Yeah. It wasn't because he did something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I got the feeling, okay. And basically, I think it was sort of exactly what it sounds like from what he said, which is that he's doing it for mental health reasons. And like, I don't think people appreciate how hard it is working on these shows. And it's not like, you know, they think about, oh, acting, that's an easy job. They go for it, but they don't do it that long. But when they are doing the shows, they're doing it like 24/7.
Yeah. If you've listened to any of these guys that do the CW shows up in Vancouver talk about it, it is grueling.
Yeah.
It is. I can't remember if it was, what's his name? The guy that played Clark Kent in Smallville. At one point, like he demanded just that he be driven to work because he was going to die. Like, he was so fatigued driving home to the set.
Yep.
Because he's number one on call.
Often,
he's in every scene. He's there constantly. And then it's like, okay, now drive home. And they're filming in the middle of nowhere, Vancouver.
Yeah. And they often film in the middle of the night, too, because that's the only, or super early in the morning. And because that's the only time the light is right, or that's the only time they can get a place to film where it's not going to be filled with a bunch of people.
Yeah, well, special effects and fights look cooler in the dark anyway.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bunch of stuff that you may want to do in a superhero show that is very difficult to do on a regular schedule, especially the CW I can't speak to it now, especially as it appears to be winding down. Not the network, but the whole Arrowverse stuff.
Yeah.
Seems to have developed a cult, like a grueling culture of production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they had Smallville, they had Supernatural, they had all of our shows, like all the superhero shows, and they have got a machine going, or they had a machine that was just chugging away.
Yeah.
And it got tuned up pretty great, I think, in terms of putting stuff out, but not necessarily in terms of keeping everybody there.
No, for sure. Yeah,
I was about to say, but in good mental health and good spirits, like able to come back next week as refreshed as they were the week that they started. It's like, it feels like a real slog.
Yeah. I watch this dumb show called Holy Moly. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's extreme mini golf. and it's really funny. I mean, it's Rob Riggle, and that is one of the, you know, the announcers.
Can't go wrong with that guy.
It's just silly and dumb, and it's good fun to watch. And, but they film it throughout the middle of the night. I mean, it's mini golf. Like, why aren't you playing mini golf in the day? They're filming it someplace out in the sticks in California. And it's often like super cold there, and they're dropping people in water and stuff like that. It was just like, why do they have to do it this way? This seems super miserable for the contestants, first of all, because they drop, you know, there's like a lot of the holes that they have to hit through are water traps where they fall into the water, and it's like, and then they show them like out of the water, they're still soaking wet, there's, you can see their breath, it's that cold. Like, oh man, this seems stupid, like unnecessarily like painful for everybody involved.
Yeah, that stinks. I think there's part of me, and it's not a part I like, that's like, well, you signed up for it, so
it's but true. I mean, you know,
you should be able to go and have fun
or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, but you still shouldn't be put in the kind of situation like that, because once you sign, like, you don't know when you sign up, just that you're going to like be covered with icicles in your t-shirt as you try to drive home at 4 in the morning. Like,
I read that article written by the actor who was in the young woman, well, she was a girl at the time, was in Baron Munchausen. Did you read that? I think she's Canadian. And it was bad. I mean, she was a little kid, and they were having her run through explosions and stuff like that. And, you know, and her dad was telling her, well, this is, you know, this is the job. You wanted to be an actor. Get back out there.
Yeah. And that's an older article, right? Like
Terry,
a few years.
Terry Gilliam was just like, you know, laughing it all off and
right.
sending her back out there.
Yeah. Cause I,
yeah, it might've been, it might've just been circulating again.
Okay.
That's possible.
I have a lot of respect for Terry Gilliam, but
yeah. Yeah.
Then I heard of stuff that, like, his movies are awesome and whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Monty Python, kind of.
Yeah. He's a super creative guy. And then that movie obviously is from a certain time period where it was probably worse than it is now. I think a lot of things have changed since then. And I don't think you couldn't make that movie in the same way again.
No, this was from
And you wouldn't
the
80s, even have to.
No. No. Yeah. So, it would be totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you couldn't, because you wouldn't have Robin Williams, who, you know, made everything better. But had his own struggle with mental health, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess just to circle back to Jordan Hill's ass, this is the most mature explanation that I could think of. I really, kudos to this guy.
Yeah.
For walking away from a TV show because it was messing with his head. Really good on him. I think, like we just covered, production is grueling and really wears on you. And I think it's too easy to tell yourself to
suck it up.
Quote unquote man up mm-hmm. suck it up. Or that you are weak in some way because you can't handle it. None of that is true. It's just grueling, and you're burning out, and knowing that ahead of time is a remarkably mature and wise thing to do. So good on him, and congrats to him for I don't know, being such a
knowing when
an introspective,
knowing when enough is enough.
Yeah, knowing himself enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe, and I didn't look it up, but I believe Colton Haynes walked away from Arrow for similar reasons, like after a bit. He was like, this acting thing stinks. and he came back.
It's so, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of sad, right? I mean, you want these people to be having a having fun doing what they're doing. In a lot of cases, it seems like, I don't know, maybe it probably depends on the show. Like,
I think Legends had more fun than most of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I say that, only maybe because it's a comedy. Maybe it was grueling and horrible.
It could have been.
But
yeah.
When I hear them interviewed, like, they seem like they actually
doesn't seem like I mean, I don't know. Do you think they spent as much time trying to come up with, like, the perfect shot? Or if they were just like...
No.
Like, that's good enough.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, like, I know Brendan Ruth was sad. I don't like whatever.
Yeah, when he read any. Yeah, when he was
he basically got booted off, and he was sad. And and I don't think that's because the necessarily because the paycheck dried up. Although I'm sure that was part of it. But like,
yeah, he enjoyed being on the show.
He enjoyed being on the show, and he enjoyed contributing it to it. So
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
And anyway, good luck to Jordan. Hopefully, see him again soon in a less grueling thing.
Yeah.
I'm still way behind on that show, but whatever.
Yeah, I am too.
When they stop making new superhero stuff, I guess I'll catch up.
Good luck.
You know, it's getting to the point now where, you know, like you'd go to the comic store and you would buy the comics that you'd like and you'd subscribe to them and you'd be like, okay, that's X dollars a month and they're going to be put in the bin and every next Wednesday I'll be in, I'll pick up my bin, I'll buy my four comics or whatever it is and go home.
Yep.
Great. There was always so much more on the shelf that you could not read.
Yeah.
It's getting to that point with superhero content on TV now. It's like there's just too much. There's just too much stuff going on.
I've mentioned this before on the show, but I had to give up on Marvel Unlimited, which I really I enjoyed. I also think I was reading a lot of crap that I don't think was necessarily all that great. Some of it was great and some of it was just okay. And I was reading it just because, although at the same time, like it's at the end of the night, like when I'm, you know, getting ready for bed, reading a comic book is like one of the best things because it's not challenging particularly.
Yeah.
And it's not upsetting. So, it's a good way to end the night. And I keep getting tempted to subscribe again. But at the same time, I was also like reading so many comic books, I wasn't reading books anymore, which I think is kind of a bad thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't necessarily like the distinction that like one is dumber than the other, but one is
often dumber than the other. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I had gone years without reading a book. That just seems wrong.
Right. Yeah. And it's not the art form of comics can be elevated to incredible degrees. Like Sandman, we were just talking about that. Watchmen, you know, obviously great. Mouse is obviously the classic. They can be amazing. It is also a monthly periodical, which guess what? Has to be, you know, there's a limited amount of time and effort and thought that can be put into any one of these kind of things. And so sometimes it's just like, well, we got to get an issue out.
And they've spent a lot of time trying to weave them back and forth and create these events that make you buy the entire, you know, because they want you to buy more comic books, obviously. Yeah. And so they make, you know, that was the whole point of Secret Wars. All these crossover events was like, you know, we get them hooked on these other characters. We make all the stories integrated into this main story. So you have to buy, not only do you have to buy Secret Wars or whatever. Secret Wars was mostly self-contained, but like the ones that came later were like all those X-Men events.
Okay.
Like you got to buy X-Factor. You have to buy Uncanny X-Men. You have to buy X-Men. You have to buy X-Force. You have to buy, you know, like all this other stuff in order to understand, you know, supposedly get the full story of what's going on in this. You know, like, you know, you pick up the next copy of, trying to think, Onslaught or something like that. And it's like, we're picking up from what happened in Cable number 27. I was like, okay, well, I don't subscribe to Cable, so I have no idea what the hell's going on.
Yeah. Civil War was a lot like that for me too.
I
read Civil War after having not read comics for a while. Like, things come and go in my life, like my, you know, my interests. My focus of interest, I should say. And so I got to reading Civil War and I'm like, I'm confused as hell. I don't know what's going on. I could kind of get it, but it was like so intertwined and sort of confusing that. I didn't know what the next issue was. Like, what order are these in? Because people in this book are saying something that happens in like two issues later. I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know. And like, I went online to try to find like the order in which to read them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that even felt not right. Like it still didn't fit as a narrative arc. It was confusing.
Yeah.
Confusing.
I was watching some stuff on Disney Plus yesterday and I looked, they have a list of the MCU stuff in chronological order. And some of it was some of it was surprising to me. First of all,
chronological by like star date or by like release date?
Did you say star date?
I said okay. Yeah,
because I wanted to respond in kind. Yes, by star date. So like okay. So like Captain America First Avenger is the first movie.
Okay.
And then Agent Carter, which I guess is just the, it's not the show. Do they have the show on there? Anyway, whatever. It's Agent Carter. With, I don't know if it's just the short or the one shot or if it's the whole show. I don't think they would put the show in because they have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., don't they? But they didn't, it's not in that list. It's like not considered. I don't think they consider it part of the whole thing anymore. Anyway, but some of the stuff was surprising the order that it happened in. Because Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was right after Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I was super surprised by. And then some of that Groot stuff was in different
spots. I was going to say, I guess they squeezed in some of that Groot stuff, but okay.
Yeah, it was like that was spread out through the sprinkled.
Well, wait, was it right after temporally in that, like, you know, 3 months later, or was it right after in terms of like, well, nothing significant happened in the universe worth having a movie in between these two things? Do you know what I mean? Well, like one of them is like 3 years between them is one thing.
I don't know. They never really say how long it's been in the second movie from the first one. And there's probably, I mean, this, of course, this is just Disney Plus, so the Spider-Man movies are not in there. Could have been a Spider-Man movie in between there someplace. I don't know.
Is this was put out by Disney? Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's on Disney Plus. Timeline. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's why. Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
That's fascinating.
Huh. Yeah. Cause I'd seen that online, you know, like different, you know, people. And I think I've even heard of, I don't know if it's been updated in the last few years or not. A supercut of all of the stuff. So like all of the movies mashed together in chronological order, and you can download that as like a, you know, you can't get it from legally, but you can download it.
So
I was like, I would never, I'm not doing that. No.
here's an aside. This guy Simon Whistler has like, I think I started watching some, it was Mega Projects or something, but he's got like way too many channels. Mega Projects, which is like, you know, let's build the Hoover Dam and like it describes the history of it kind of thing. And then side projects, which are lesser ones. And then so many channels. And like Amanda watches some of his channels a lot and she's into true crime. And he's got a new one called The Casual Criminalist, I believe. Where basically the whole premise of a lot of his stuff is he's a script is written for him. He's presented with it. He reads it out in his very British speech. And, you know, you press publish and you got a show.
Yeah.
Type thing. I woke up one morning, not more than a week ago. And I was in hour five on my iPad of watching a YouTube video, 12 hours of Casual Criminalist true crime, 12 hours of true crime.
Oh no.
I was like, I am pretty sure I've been programmed in my sleep to just do the most awful.
Yeah,
it's
really.
True crime. Yeah. It's a true crime podcast, basically, with video. Like
when you snap, we'll know why.
Well, when? Yeah, thanks.
No, I just, you know, I'm trying to be hopeful.
Yeah. No, just thanks for
trying to be positive.
Yeah, yeah, might have done that already. Anyway, yeah, that much MCU is way too much MCU, like 12 hours of true crime is like enough to drive anybody. Thank God I slept through it. I hope I'm okay, but that is brutal.
Surprised your iPad lasted that long. Was it plugged in?
iPads are amazing, man. Yeah. Like, do you know how great they are? Like, if you turn the brightness all the way down and press play, they are just machines that just pumping out from network, decoding and putting it on the screen in like the lowest possible thing. You could burn maybe 20% of your battery, but over the course of a night, pretty amazing little devices.
Yeah.
We are wandering into other shows, yes, which we tend to do.
I think we should probably bring this one to a close.
I think so.
We will we'll be back next week to talk about episode 3 of She-Hulk. We want to thank our dear readers for reading along on the transcripts. And I'd also like to thank my co-host, Guy English.
Thanks, man. Where can I buy a t-shirt?
Oh, good question. Well, if you go to cottonbureau.com and you search on BiffCast, you can find many a t-shirt. And a couple even, well, no, I guess one now. No, there's more than one related to this particular show that we're covering. So take a look, and you can help out the show, and we would appreciate it.
Yeah. Also, you can sign up for a membership. Somehow, not going to even gonna bother to tell you how.
At the incomparable.
Yeah, the incomparable will help you out, yeah, for sure.
They'll let you know how. Just go to incomparable.com.
I think last time, or I don't know, at one point I promised that I would have details on how to encourage people to join the Incomparable Discord. I do not have them. So all I've got.
I'm not even in that Discord.
Yeah, so, no, me neither.
I don't know how to join it, obviously.
I'm looking at a reminder here to be like, oh yeah, I should tell people how to join this thing that I haven't done myself. So guess what? We can all muddle through that together.
You might be able to find out on theincomparable.com.
I'm positive. Yeah, Jason turns out to be a very professional and lovely human.
I'm sure
being.
He would know that we weren't going to be able to take care of it, so he took care of it himself.
Yeah, well, do you know what? And I didn't hear a word from him about this. I managed to put up the episode last week late, way late, because whatever. I had a lot going on last week. I had to move. Well, not move. I didn't move, but I had to get myself from one side of the continent to the other, a whole bunch of work stuff. Long story short, nothing was on time. And I finally put the episode up properly, but it wasn't properly. I hadn't put a title on it. The MP3 had a title and all that, but on the website, there was just nothing. And then just magically, last week's title appeared somehow, and it wasn't Dan. So it must have been Jason, the benevolent hand of Jason just coming down and fixing it. And not even, like, admonishing me.
Yeah, no, just,
I would have been totally fine with it. I'm like, yeah, that screwed that up.
Just going to take care of it.
Yeah, he's just going to take care of it. Roll his eyes at the idiot he gave the keys to. Yeah.
Only so much we can be expected to handle on our own with our limited faculties.
If you would like to let us know how our limited faculties are hurting you in your life after listening to this show, you can reach us at BiffCast on Twitter. And I guess we'll see you next week. Is that it? Other closing business. Yeah.
Yeah. Go watch the Star Trek.
Yeah, go. Yeah, well, we could talk about Lower Decks in the bonus show.
we don't have time for a bonus show.
Yeah. We also don't have a bonus show.
So. You're thinking of the other show.